RTL Original Podcast.
Alison, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and the work that you do, please?
Absolutely. So I am American. I'm originally from the state of Florida. I've been living in Europe for almost 9 years now. I did my bachelor's in psychology at the American University of Paris, and then I moved to Luxembourg in 2016 to do my master's at the university here in Belleville. And since 2020, I've been in private practice. I have my own office in Merle, where I see almost exclusively teenagers and their family for therapy. I mean, I do get some adults. I get a couple younger kids every now and again, but about 75% of my clients are between like 11 and 19 years old. So my practice is a lot of talking about stress, anxiety, academic issues, confidence building and resiliency, these kind of really common topics among youth and teenagers and their families.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us to talk about this. We'll go straight into the questions. So the questions that came in were a mixed bag, and we've kind of narrowed them down to what we think were the most popular questions. So we'll go straight into it, and then maybe in between we'll chat a little bit as well. So the first question that came in, I like to read the questions exactly as they come in because I think people write them the way they do for a reason. He or she says, teenagers these days are increasingly experiencing depression. Do you think it is time for the school system to involve self-help lessons for students?
Short answer, absolutely yes. I feel that just because of the sheer prevalence of, you know, not just depression, but even anxiety, stress, even just run-of-the-mill sadness. It's to the point where we really want to be on top of this problem before it emerges. If we wait until our youth are showing these worrying signs and already deep in these negative feelings, it's not too late. It's just not completely necessary, I think, to wait for it to get to that point. And there's a lot of just really basic psychoeducation, as I call it, that I think a lot of young people, actually all young people and their families need. So some of the things that I go over in my practice with young people, I'm just sometimes surprised that people don't know more about these things before coming to me. And it would be great if they could have more knowledge about, you know, how these things work, how to mitigate them, what the role of stress and anxiety is, why it's a thing, what we're supposed to do with it. These are things that are really applicable in schools, especially when these things are sometimes exacerbated by school and the stress that comes with it. So yes, absolutely. I think it would be great if the counseling team or the SAPAS at the schools could have these, yeah, self-help and psychoeducation courses for kids of all ages, I think.
What does the curriculum just briefly look like for self-help? Like, what are we teaching?
I would say just kind of, I know it sounds silly, but like how your emotions work, you know, what they do, you know, why are we feeling sad sometimes? What is anxiety? Why does it even exist? These are kind of the first rundown things that I go through with people, and they're really happy to have the information. But again, it would be great if we could disseminate that already in schools so that everybody has it. Also, it sounds really simple, but how to de-stress. I mean, a lot of kids these days don't know what to do when they're stressed, and they'll do things like reach for TikTok as a way to, you know, like relax at the end of a day when that's not a de-stress technique. You know, it's no. Just not. It often causes more stress than people realize. But de-stressing, what emotions are, what to do with them, why they're there, and also some signs to look out for in your friends and family to see if somebody else is struggling, because it's not always as straightforward as somebody, you know, crying in the middle of class or something like that. So yeah, I'd say just more about like knowing more about yourself and signs and others around you. And yeah, things like that would be a great start.
That's such a good point. It's like, instead of teaching kids to just look out for themselves and look out for what's wrong with them, how useful would it be if we were a community and a society of people who were being taught to look out for other people and the signs in other people as well?
It would make a big difference.
Yes, yeah. I can see that. You mentioned just now how kids will reach for TikTok as a sign of, as a way to de-stress or what they think will relax them. And the thing is, although that sounds really obvious in this scenario, sitting here speaking about psychology and children, it's not that obvious because a lot of adults will come home from work after a long day and feel that scrolling through social media or, you know, watching videos on TikTok is a really good way to de-stress. And then next thing you know, they can't fall asleep and all that. So
exactly, yeah.
That obviously translates to adults as well. Mm-hmm. What is it about social media that makes us think that we're relaxing but really isn't?
Because it's not directly related to whatever was stressing you out in the beginning, you know? So if you come home stressed from a long day at the office, TikTok feels mindless and it feels like, I'm just going to go with TikTok mm-hmm. as the example. It feels mindless. It feels fun and silly and you're comfortable on the couch or in bed while you're doing it. But the issue becomes, you know, especially for young people that being on social media, there's a lot of anxiety-inducing things on the phone and on the internet that maybe we don't realize in the moment are just kind of adding to the stress. So for example, like teenagers on Instagram, I hear this all the time, you know, they'll go on for a break in between classes or after school, and then they'll have, you know, the fear that they missed out on some event that their friends went to that they didn't. They might compare themselves to their friends physically, you know, in terms of looks or in terms of followers, things like this. And also just in general, like the constant flashing noises and colors and notifications is inherently not de-stressing, like mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think it's the mindlessness of it. And one thing I do want to say, though, is that social media itself is not inherently evil or, you know, the bad guy all the time. I mean, it is a tool at the end of the day, and there are some really great positives to it, as long as, especially in young people, it is regulated and monitored. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I mean by that is, like, if your child has a really big interest in a certain musician or in an artist or something like this, they're going to learn a lot more about this person by following them, you know, and by seeing all the archives of their work and things like that. Social media can really be great for cultivating interests, and not just in young people, and adults too. But the issue becomes when we either lose track of time just scrolling for hours and hours and we didn't realize that we were sitting there for that long, when it's interrupting sleep, like you pointed out. That's a great point. I have that a lot, especially with young people, but with adults too. Yeah, so the issue becomes when it starts to impact your life negatively. And I think a lot of people aren't aware of when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the next question is, how do you cope with stress? I'm guessing that's like, how does one cope
Yeah, like how
stress?
Does everybody?
Yeah, how does everybody cope with stress? You've touched on that briefly.
Yeah, that is super person dependent. That's really subjective. I mean, what works for me and you and our neighbor is probably completely different. Overall, though, I'd say like the main tenets are some sort of physical activity we need, even if it's not hardcore exercise, that's fine. Walking the dog, going on a hike on the weekend, whatever it is, it's some yoga before bed, whatever it is that you can muster and that feels good for you. Talking it out is really great for some. I know a lot of people are uncomfortable talking about their feelings, and that's fine. You don't have to totally like bare your soul to somebody, but at least just kind of expressing the things that aren't going awesome or whatever your fears might be, that can be really helpful to kind of getting it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I mean, yeah, just doing things that are for you. I mean, I know nowadays the word self-care is used a lot and it can be a little cringy sometimes, but it's true, of just doing things that are only for you. For some of my clients, that's taking a bath at night. That doesn't do anything for me. You know, for me, it's sitting on the couch with the cat reading a book. But that is completely different for everybody. I think as long as we're disconnecting from whatever it is that's stressing us out, and oftentimes that very much does mean putting the phone down, turning the TV off, you know, going to do something that clears your mind, and that maybe you can think through some things a little bit, or just have a nice mindless walk.
It's funny, I wish someone had taught me, or simply I had discovered as a teenager, that physically moving is mm-hmm. what I needed to do. Because mm-hmm. I hated physical exercise.
Me too.
As a teenager. And now as an adult, I rely on it 3-4 times a uh-huh. week. And I wish I had known that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's the thing, we don't have to move mountains.
No.
You know? You don't have to go do a marathon, just anything. Yeah.
How much worse did things get during COVID?
Well, so I would say definitely quite a lot. I actually set up my private practice in 2020, and I definitely see the effects that lockdown in particular had. And there are some, you know, there are some kids and teenagers out there who are just naturally a bit more prone to anxiety and stress. And things like a global pandemic completely do not help that, as you can imagine. So seeing friends and family stressed, potentially losing loved ones, losing that connection with friends face to face. And of course, there was a bit of a dip academically for a while for a lot of kids who were homeschooled. So it created quite a lot of stress about the future for kids who already were maybe weird about germs or things like this. That really didn't help at all. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it did exacerbate quite a lot. At the same time, though, kids are really resilient, and that includes teenagers. Once they got back out there, a lot of them are almost like, what, COVID now, you know? like they've really kind of moved on and gotten their lives back. But I don't know, I really felt the most for, you know, the older kids who were going off to uni and then had to do that online. And that still has an effect for sure.
So I knew this would come up as soon as we wrote the topic together. Screen time.
Oh, yeah.
How can we reduce screen time in kids in a world so full of it?
I think one thing that's really important for parents of kids of any age is to have an open discussion about this, because, again, screen time is not in itself a horrible thing. You know, having an interest that involves screens is not a bad thing for some kids. And we don't want to just insist to our kids that, like, screens are bad and they shouldn't be on them. We want them to understand why, like, what the potential dangers are, you know, what the boundaries are, why they are what they are. And we also want to not negotiate, that's not what I mean, but kind of come up with a solution with our children in tandem. You know, we want to figure this out together so the child understands why. So I think, you know, there are better ways to do this than just give me your phone, you know, or you only get the phone for an hour a day because I said so. You know, I think there's a better way that we can have that discussion so that the kids understand and know what to look out for on certain apps and on the internet in general. But also, sometimes we have to look at our own behavior as parents. I mean, if you're only scrolling on your phone and watching TV when you get home from work, I mean, that's directly modeling that to your children, you know, and then it seems quite hypocritical to them for you then to go, oh, no, but you can't do the same, you know. So we want to kind of look at after our own behaviors in face of our kids and just encourage habits and interests that are not screen related. You know, if your child is really passionate about coding or gaming or something, that is great. But we need to balance this out with, again, either some physical activity or some family time or quiet time reading a book, whatever it is that is interesting to your child. But it's not just about vilifying screens. It's about making sure that kids and families have a diverse, you know, range of activities and things that they and a balance in life. Yeah.
How do I explain to my 3-year-old that too much screen time is bad? Because I will let her watch one or two episodes of something and then I stop her and she can't understand why. She goes, but why? And she's not mad at me. She's just like, but why, Mama? So then I say, well, you know, we can't watch too much because our eyes will hurt. And she, but then she says, but my eyes don't hurt, so I obviously need to give her another reason.
I love that. You're in the why age now.
Oh, my God, yes.
Well, anything I tell you, she's just going to ask why about again.
True.
But I mean, it's okay with 3. I don't have a lot of experience with 3-year-olds. But overall, I think, again, it's not about the screen being bad. It's about promoting other stuff. So, you know, like, well, why don't we go color now? You know, we haven't done that in a while. Or, you know, and if also kids love being presented with a choice. So you can be like, okay, we can either watch a third and last video, you know, or we do this. And then after the last video, you're like, well, you said you picked the last video. So now we can either go on a walk or we can color or, you know, whatever. So that she feels like she has some sort of, you know, control of the situation. Yeah.
True. Last night I said, would you rather watch more? Because I tried that. I said, would you rather watch more or help mommy cut mushrooms? And her favorite thing in the world is to cut mushrooms.
You lucky woman.
Yes. And luckily, mushrooms were for dinner as well. So it was really helping me out. But I bought her a Montessori knife recently. So anything that's like a nice texture to cut through, she loves it. So that is what I
would. So she picked mushrooms.
Yes.
That
yes,
is great.
Because she loves chopping. Okay, next question. How do we prepare kids from a young age for the dark side of social media?
That's a great question because, you know, again, I've said it, but I think no parent wants to scare their kids about these things, especially when mom and dad have social media accounts or all of their friends, you know, at school have social media accounts. From a young age, we don't need to get into things like cyberbullying and, you know, catfishing. And, you know, like ransomware. We don't have to get into all of this when kids are young.
This must be a different generation because I grew up being scared into submission. Like my parents telling me like the worst, like they're like, everyone you speak to on the internet that isn't your classmate is just a creepy old man at home staring at you.
Living in his mom's basement.
Exactly.
Every single one of them.
Exactly. So I was like, from a young age, I was scared to submission. Probably not the right.
Did that work when you were a teenager though?
Not when I was a teenager.
Yeah,
when I was a kid,
yes. By that point, you're
yes.
like, I'll take the risk.
No,
yeah.
It's true. When I was a kid, yes, it really worked. But then by the time I became a teenager and I was like, oh, I can find this out for myself, things changed. So you're right.
Yeah.
It obviously doesn't work.
Yeah. So we don't want to scare the crap out of our kids either too early. You know, there's enough scary stuff in the world. I think totally depends on the child. Multiple kids can be the same age and just have completely different levels of maturity when it comes to hearing these things. So it depends on the specific child. But I think there are moments where we can do this. You know, like if you're setting up a child's social media account, for example, when you make it private, you explain why, you know, in age-appropriate language, of course. And again, not focusing on there are bad people out there, but more of, if you're sharing things online, you should know exactly who's seeing it, you know, and make sure that it's only accessible by friends and family. When the kids are a little older, I think, like as teenagers, you can be more straight with them and you can level with them about things like sharing appropriate content online, consent to distribute posts, you know, privacy settings, because a lot of teenagers now want to go viral and you can't do that if your account is private, you know. So then we can have these discussions, I think, more frankly with teenagers. But overall, I mean, if a child is of a certain age where you feel like you can't have that discussion fully, I'm also not totally sure that the social media account is a great idea at that point. Maybe if a child's too young to fully understand, the account can be run by mom or dad. You know, if the child wants to make TikToks, that's fine. And we can post them and watch the response, but we don't need to maybe allow a 9-year-old like the entire access of all of TikTok, you know. So I think there's like a happy medium to be found. It just depends on the family and the child in question, I'd say.
So there is no need to prepare them in the sense of like warn them about all the dangers of it.
Maybe not all at once.
Okay.
You know, I think again, like you can find natural opportunities for these things to come up as we're talking about it or as we watch the news or as we watch movies where social media is involved. You know, there are like really, rather than it being a huge sit-down discussion, you know, we can also just find like little daily moments and ways to bring that in there. But also, I think it doesn't hurt to have a serious sit-down conversation if, you know, you're, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old sits you down and says they want to be on Snapchat or Instagram or TikTok. The other thing, though, is that this requires a little bit of knowledge from mom or dad about how these things work.
Yes.
And if they don't have that at all, then they might need to either consult somebody or maybe like peruse the app a little bit themselves to understand all the functions. Because even if you give your child a lecture about the, you know, the big bad things we all know about, if you don't really know the specific features of the app, you don't know what kind of things can go on in there. So there's a little bit of education for mom and dad too, I think, or for the guardian, you know, of what exactly it is we're letting the child access, even if we do tell them all the spooky stories.
Yeah, I mean, especially with things like Snapchat, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
I
recently, someone was telling me about the you know, the things that go on Snapchat, you know, and I just thought, oh my God, I would never have even known that it could be so sordid, you know. And a lot of parents of teenagers might be unaware of what is out there.
Absolutely. I mean, Snapchat's a great example because, you know, kids will pitch it to their parents as, oh, it's just like a messaging app.
Yes.
But when you go into it, not only is there the whole thing with, you know, images disappearing after 24 hours, there's also this whole section of, I think it's called Discovery, and you can just read all these news stories and see all these videos, and some of them can be quite sexual or reference drugs or, you know, other really adult themes. And if you don't go through the app yourself, you have no idea.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
And I think there's one more function where it's like you can see exactly where your friends are.
Oh my goodness, yes.
At any given time. Uh-huh. Right. A tracking, exactly. It's like a tracking device.
It really basically. Is. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And what about bullying on social media?
Yeah, that's a one that I've been talking about with people a lot recently, because that whole hiding behind the screen thing can definitely have some sinister implications. I've known some really sweet kids even to make fake accounts and harass people.
Why do they do that? Please tell me about it. Because adults do this as yeah. well. Like, mm-hmm. I just need to know, like, why do people do this?
Whoever's doing it assumes or they think that they have a justifiable reason. Okay. You know, so there was one girl that I heard of who her friend was being bullied by somebody in person at school. So she then went on social media to kind of bully the bully into stopping, you know?
Okay.
So then we have this whole hiding behind the screen. So now this girl is saying things she probably wouldn't have otherwise. But there's traces of these things, you know? Mm-hmm. Even if you have an anonymous account, it's pretty easy to figure out who was behind it. Mm-hmm. So this is a whole risk. But yeah, I think it's just the confidence of that comes from not being face to face with somebody, and things get really dramatic and really intense, I think, very quickly, because you would never say these things to somebody's face, you know?
No.
And that is something that kids need to be aware of as well, that they don't feel like they have to deal with it on their own. So if they are getting messages that they think are either harassing or from strangers or things like this, we want to encourage them to come forward to mom and dad and not be scared of any kind of, you know, punishment or anything like this. But no, that is a huge issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a case in the UK of a really, really well-known mummy blogger.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also a midwife. So she was extremely well known, because I think they've got, I think it's like 4 or 5 kids, and mm-hmm. they were documenting the whole thing. And she reached like a really good level of success. You know, she released a mm-hmm. book, and she was like the most famous midwife at one point. And then it came out later that she had made a fake account and used it to go onto the gossip forums to write about all her close friends who were also bloggers. But in order to disguise the situation, she also wrote a bit about herself. Mm-hmm. And she even like wrote about her husband. And when all that got exposed, she got bullied back. So uh-huh. there's a whole twist of events, mm-hmm. you see. So then the trolls all came after her and all her followers turned against her, to the point where she lost all her business deals.
Wow.
She's no longer on social media. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure she had to resign from being a midwife because she was a public figure.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
The thing is that's another good point of like, it's a lot of release of emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
By doing things like this. And maybe, I mean, that just says to me that, you know, she either didn't feel like she could be honest with her friends about whatever it was that was going on, you know, or that there was like just a really big need for gossip in there.
Yeah.
And again, like that just goes to show, like, it's not just teenagers cyberbullying, and
yes.
it's not just them who aren't really thinking through these actions, you mm-hmm. know? Wow.
So the next question is, are there any state programs helping kids who are being bullied in Luxembourg?
For state programs, I am not the expert on this one. I'm not completely sure. I know that the Ministry of Education does have quite a lot of sub-branches and people to contact. So you can definitely, if your child is in a Luxembourgish school, there's the SEPAS team. Mm-hmm. And I believe they have their own set of procedures for how this goes. You also can speak to school counselors. Normally, there's a protocol at school for things like this.
Okay.
Yeah.
But bullying at school is obviously a really difficult thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Do you get a lot of clients coming to you for bullying at school?
I do, yeah. And it's always really sad to hear, because, you know, they're always just really lovely kids who are mm-hmm. being picked on for, honestly, sometimes just ridiculous reasons. And kids at a certain age, it's not that the kids themselves are mean. They just mm-hmm. can't fully see, you know, how this joke isn't funny to everybody or how this comment is hurtful. And it only really takes one person within a friend group to start doing that to somebody, and then everyone else kind of follows along. And mm-hmm. then I've seen it to the point where we have an entire class or a whole grade kind of against one person.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's really, really sad. And at that point, you know, we're just trying to build resiliency, but also, of course, address this problem. I mean, it kind of fires me up sometimes. I'm like, oh, can I call the school and, you know, talk to Johnny, you know?
Yeah. No, I believe that.
Yeah.
And what if your kid is the kid that's the bully?
That is another interesting one. So that always comes from somewhere. You know, mm-hmm. kids don't wake up one day and just decide that they want to bully a classmate. And often they either don't see it as bullying. They might think that they're just joking and they don't see like how deep the effects are, or they found some other kind of justification. I mean, it's again, it's not that the kid themselves are horrible most of the time.
Most of the time.
we've all known, you know, in high school, like at least one person that just seemed like they enjoyed it. You know? But I think that is really tough for parents to find out. And that's where things like family therapy could really be helpful, so that we have some mediation, because that's a really tough discussion. And we don't want to push our child further away just because of something that they've done or a mistake that they've made. And we do need to get to the bottom of, you know, what this is. Is this something like some sort of tiff between two people who went too far? Is this a serious lack of self-esteem in the bully and they're just projecting that onto the other kids? There's mm-hmm. a lot that could be going on there. So yeah, I'd say definitely recruiting some sort of like neutral outside help would be really helpful in that.
Someone is asking you, what do you do if you don't like one of your clients?
That is hilarious. I would say that I can't even really answer that one, because especially with teenagers, it's not really about liking them or not. It's about, you know, helping them with what they need. At the same time, especially more for the adults, like, It's a chemistry thing. It's a trust thing, you know, between a therapist and their client. Just because I'm available doesn't mean that I'm going to be the right therapist for you, you know. So if something about our interaction is not my favorite or is rubbing me the wrong way, it's probably the same for you, you know, and you're probably not going to want to continue with me anyway. And in that situation, I just help them to find somebody else, give them some referrals and hope that they find the therapist for them. It's a great question, though.
One of my friends is a therapist and she says, it's not my job to like.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's irrelevant, really.
It actually can hinder a little bit if I like you too much, you know.
Yes. Okay, and the last question, would you consider sharing your stress and anxiety knowledge with local and international schools? You already do that, don't you?
I do,
yeah,
actually.
I was going to say, you already
yeah.
do.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do, because I could talk about this all day long. So yeah, I've done...
It's so interesting, though.
It's,
I love it.
Oh, and it's like, it's my whole life. It's, you know, I have teenagers at home, I have teenagers at the office, so that I just kind of like live and breathe like teenager stress. So I work with some of the international schools, mainly all the schools that have English-speaking curricula. And I'll do, yeah, webinars, talks with them, like for like mental health weeks or, you know, things like this. I love doing that. So, yeah, if there are any schools out there that need yes. like a presenter, I'm your girl.
I've actually got a question of my own.
Yeah.
So when I was growing up, I remember feeling like really stressed and anxious. And then I can't remember if it was my mum or someone at school would just tell me, oh, but that's just your hormones. You're just going through puberty. It didn't help me knowing that.
No.
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 So in that situation where you're like, that is the answer that you're being given, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree because
it's true.
It
like,
is.
Part
it
of
is
it is
true.
Yes.
Because, you know, your brain is not done fully developing till you're 25. So a lot
wow.
of, yeah, it's,
wow.
yeah, like your prefrontal cortex, which is like all the good, like, decision making.
That makes,
you know,
so
judgment.
Much sense.
Yeah, it's not fully done till you're 25 years old. No, looking back, I think a lot of us realize that
wow,
that's true.
That's so
yeah.
true.
Yeah. And so are you like having a flashback of
yes,
like all the bad decisions?
Yes. That like all of them, all for, like, this is not the place for it. But as soon as we go off air, I'm definitely going to tell you a couple.
So yeah, that's it's true and it's a fact. And that is a big part of why kids take risks and make bad decisions sometimes. And, you know, emotions are all over the place. But no, it doesn't really help them knowing that. Sometimes with my more mature teenagers, I might kind of share that with them if they're like interested, you know, in how their brain works and things like that. But it's kind of condescending to hear that as well, you know, that you can't fully make decisions until you're 25. that, you know, you have 10 more years of, you know, like an undeveloped brain. I don't know. I think, again, like even just understanding that like anxiety is an emotion we all have, you know, it's not a disorder. It's not, something rare. You know, we all have that funny feeling in our stomach sometimes, or that anticipation of something that might happen. So it's really, really common. And I think understanding that and understanding like what's going on and how you respond to it for yourself is more important than being like told again that you have hormones as a teenager. You know? At the same time, like, I mean, that is also helpful to understand as well. You know, your body plays a huge role in how your brain works and how your thought processes go. So,
So Allison, give us some tips for managing screen time.
Especially with your children, I would say, first of all, set some healthy boundaries in terms of what apps are being used, how often, how many times a day. Secondly, talk through this. You know, don't just say, because I said so. You know, have a discussion with your child about why we're setting these boundaries, what the pros are, et cetera. And finally, I know it sounds obvious, but know what they're doing. You know what your child's getting up to on the internet. Doesn't mean you have to stand over their shoulder the whole time, but just have an idea, you know, of what their apps are, privacy settings, things like this.
Thank you. And what does self-care look like for children and adults?
It looks different for everybody. Overall, I tell people that it is anything you're doing just for you, just because you want to, and it makes you feel good and is relaxing. So for some people, that's walking the dog. For some people, it's taking a bath. For some, it's reading a book or drawing a cartoon. You know, there are so many things, but just something that is not an obligation and that you enjoy doing, and making the time for that each day if possible is really, really important.
And why is self-care so important?
Honestly, we live in such a go, go, go society now, and we are always expected to be on and productive and doing something largely for other people. And just for our own mental health and for our own emotional regulation, it's really important to do some things for no other reason than because you want to and it feels good. And it gets your mind off of whatever your obligations are.
Allison, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
If any local or international schools are listening, then do reach out to Allison Adams. Do you have a website or a thing that you wanted people to know?
No, but you can find my information on slp.lu, the Psychologists Association website. Yeah, okay. And on LinkedIn. I basically live on LinkedIn, so.
Okay, so connect with Allison on LinkedIn. And thank you again for talking to us about
thank
this very
so
important topic. Thank you.